Are you tired of feeling burned out? I know I used to feel burned out all the time. And then I discovered some tips, tools, and strategies to go from burned out to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. I will be sharing them on this show, as well as interviewing experts that are going to help you transform from exhausted to energized and stressed out to serene. If you're ready to break free from the burnout for good, let's jump into the show. So exciting. Okay, yay, now we're live. Welcome, everyone, to the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant podcast. I am your host, Rebecca Whitman, helping you go from burned out to balanced, beautiful, and abundant through aligning your life in seven key areas, which I call my seven pillars of abundance. One of the seven key areas is financial. And the number one key to being abundant financially is to be great at sales. So today I have a sales trainer and guru on the show. I'm so excited to introduce her. Welcome to the show, Julie Thomas.
Thanks, Rebecca. It's awesome to be here and talk to your audience today. It's exciting.
Yeah, it was so great. I heard you speak at a conference, the eWomen Icon Conference last summer in Dallas. And I was like blown away by your confidence and your posture and your sales acumen. And I knew that I had to have you on my show to share some wisdom with my community. So I'm so excited to dive into your sales method. So welcome again to the show, Julie.
Thank you.
So let me tell my audience a little bit about your background. Julie Thomas is the president and the CEO of Value Selling Associates. She is a noted speaker, an author, and a consultant. She credits her value selling framework for her own meteoric rise through sales ranks, sales management, and corporate leadership positions. So, Julie, tell us your story. How did you end up being one of the best sales trainers in the world? What was your path like? I don't know if you were born like, you know, being the top salesperson of Girl Scout cookies or if it was like a climb. Tell us a little bit about your origin story.
So it's interesting. I call myself an accidental entrepreneur for sure. I never set out to run my own company. And actually, sales ended up being a very accidental profession for me. When I was going to college, my stepfather was a CPA. And like many kids starting off college, I had no idea what I wanted to major in. I just didn't know what was of interest to me. And my freshman year, my first semester, my favorite class was economics. I'm a little weird that way. And I loved it. And my stepfather immediately said to me, okay, if you like economics, here's what I think you should do. Economics is in the liberal arts school as a social science. I think you should transfer to the business school and get your degree in finance and then take as many economics courses as electives as you can. And that's what I did. And it turned out to be the best advice I ever had because it doesn't matter what you were going to do, you have to understand how businesses work. And so that was great advice to kind of set the foundation. But then my degree was in finance. So guess what my first job was out of college? Finance. And I hated it. I was bored silly. I was doing, it felt like data entry. I was working on old computers all day long, running reports, looking at spreadsheets. I hated it. So 2 years into that job, I quit, didn't know what I was going to do, and got a job for a company on the East Coast. I moved back to Connecticut, which is where I'd gone to high school, and got a job for a company in a finance team, kind of an accounting team, but I was in the sales organization. So one of the things I was doing in that sales organization was the foundation of what was creating the commissions. And I saw how these people that were my age, that I was just as smart, just as talented as, how much more money they were making than me. And I started lobbying with the VP of sales saying, I can be your next salesperson. And at the beginning, they said, but you're in finance. I said, that's okay. It's okay. And so about 6-7 months into it, they literally, the VP of sales walked into my little, it wasn't even an office, it was a little cubicle, and said, all right, Julie, I'm going to give you your chance. And he promoted me into an entry-level sales job. And I say it was a promotion because it was absolutely what I aspired to. And even though I was a couple years out of college, I all of a sudden I was on a commission plan where I was going to make that year double, triple what I made in a staff role. So that's how I kind of got the sales bug. And I was good at it. I was a top performer in that first year. I was promoted by my second year, and then immediately was a top performer in our kind of highest performing, competing against people that had 10 years, 20 years of sales executives, and I was outperforming many of them, and went into leadership from that standpoint. And I was trained in the program that I now run early on in my career, and it changed my life. It was intuitive, it was practical, and it was implementable for me to follow this process and gain the skills. And I fell in love with it. And here I am.
And here you are. So what are some common mistakes? I know you've trained a ton of salespeople. What are some of the most common mistakes that you've seen that salespeople make, and how do you correct them?
So the number one mistake that we see sales professionals make, and this is in any industry, is in that what we actually say is they show up and throw up. They show up and they get the meeting with their ideal dream customer or client, and then they show up and all they do is talk and literally vomit all of their capabilities, tell them all about their products and services, and then kind of sit back and say, so how many do you want? You know, when do you want to get started? And they've lost the buyer within the first few minutes. So our program is designed on not pitching, but engaging and asking thoughtful, deliberate questions to create need for your products and services, so that when you do educate them, because eventually, obviously, I have to tell them what we do and how we do it, I do it in a way that I understand the context of what that person needs and what they're looking for, and then sell them back that, position my position, my products and services in that context. That's one of the number one mistakes they do. And they think, especially if I've got a really short window, I only have 20 minutes with this person, then I got to talk really fast and get more information out. Like, and they've lost them. They've lost them by what just dumping on them.
What are some poignant questions that salespeople can ask that will get some pain points or some needs out of prospects?
Yeah. So that, and that's it. So if you think of whatever you sell, whether you sell a product, a service, yourself as a coach or a partner or a resource, whatever it is you're selling, if you think of that holistically as this is a solution that I offer to the world and to my existing clients, the first set of questions you need to uncover are, what problem does that solution solve? Mm-hmm. Why would somebody need a coach, a consultant, a piece of software, a product that you might be selling? And once you understand what that is, you can design and execute questions designed to get at that. So think about your solution, identify what what I call problems, but it's the pain, it's the challenge, it's the obstacle, it's the thing they can't do without you. Or someone like you. And then once I understand that, this is something that many sales reps fail to do when they're selling, is identifying if those problems are worth solving. Because you can talk to anybody. I mean, you could walk through my living room, you could walk through my office, and you could identify all kinds of things that I could change, right? I need new carpeting. I need to do this. I need to do that, right? But for whatever reason, it's not a priority to me. But if you identify the things that are a priority to me and then focus on solving those problems, it turns the sale of your solution from a nice to have into a need to have and creates urgency around, I need to do this today, not someday. And that's really the link from a lot of sales reps. They're good at finding the pain, but what they discover is that pain isn't painful enough to warrant changing today. And everybody has to make trade-offs in choices. Nobody that I'm selling to has complete unlimited resources, right? Whether it's I can only do so much at any one time or I can only spend so much at any one time, people have to prioritize that and they prioritize those problems into what am I willing to live with and what can I address today?
And how do you create urgency if somebody doesn't feel like it's a pressing problem? Is that impossible to do? If somebody has a problem, but they are not like desperately unhappy, are there any ways to create urgency as a salesperson?
There are certain tactics that you can do to try to create urgency. Some of them is focusing on the implication of inaction. Mm-hmm. And could there be an unintended consequence there if you don't do that? So if you don't take action on something now, could it grow into a bigger problem that's going to require twice as much investment to fix it in the future? So you can do that. But there are times where you do have a prospective buyer who is not a qualified buyer at this point in time. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to sales, I often say one definition of selling is facilitating buying. And most of us have had experience with pushy salespeople that are more interested in getting the deal than focusing on our needs. And that's never how I want to be perceived. Yes, I want to win the deal. Don't be confused. I am a revenue professional, right? But I want to do it with the right fit clients at the right time. And I do that by focusing on the anticipated outcomes. So when I talk about problems that are worth solving, if I understand when you need to have them solved by, I can kind of back into, okay, based on that, is it reasonable for us to get started now? And if it's reasonable for us to get started now, is it reasonable that you can review a scope of work and make that decision tomorrow or Friday or next Friday or by the end of the month, whatever it is? I use their outcomes to create urgency in the timing today.
So some of the most common objections are, I need to think about it. How do you handle that objection in your method?
So the first thing I do is say, what do you need to think about? Of course you need to think about it if you're making a big decision.
Yeah.
Are you thinking about, am I the right fit? Are you thinking about, is there enough return to justify the investment? Are you thinking about the timing? Because an I need to think about is a barrier without any information for you to act on. So I want to know what they want to think about. Are they considering, is this the right approach? Are they considering if this is the best fit? Are they considering whether or not this is a priority for now? Once you can get under the covers a little bit and understand what the specific thing is, you can acknowledge and have a conversation about that and maybe remind or re-educate or answer any questions that would make that easier to give them that information. So that's the main reasons. Because I want to think about it, could be a no, and I just don't want to tell you on the phone. So I'm going to tell you I'm going to think about it, and then I'm going to ghost you. Because a lot of people will avoid confrontation, right? Well, if I tell her no, is she going to get upset with me? Or is she going to try to change my mind? And it's going to be uncomfortable. And people will avoid those conversations. And they'll make all kinds of stuff up. I need to think about it. I just don't have the budget right now. How do you argue with that? Okay. You know, so we want to understand what's what's behind that or under the covers of that.
How do you handle people ghosting you? I feel like that's more prevalent now than it used to be, because I've also been in sales 25 years and it's just common. I mean, it's in the dating world, it's in the sales world. Like, do you have any techniques to bring somebody back in when they've ghosted you?
Well, there's no silver bullet. First of all, I wish I could say, I'll say these five words and they'll call you back like that, right? No, yeah. Or they'll text you back or whatever it is. So there's no that. So there's a couple of preventative tactics you can do. So first of all, if I'm selling to you, Rebecca, before we end this call, let's set our next call. Yeah. It's often easier to reschedule than it is to schedule. Now, it's not going to, yes. You still might cancel it the second
right.
You decide to. But then the other reason is many of the times we're being ghosted, and I look at the outreach that I get as people trying to sell to me, their ask is all about them. Julie, will you call me back? I want this. I want that. And at the end of the day, people don't care about what you want. So you have to find compelling reasons that would add value to that individual. So one of the tactics that we teach in our outreach, and this works when people are ghosting you too, is how does your message become not just an interruption, but a value-added interruption? And how do you add insight in that messaging and make it about them and not you?
Of a message that you would leave for someone that was a value add interruption rather than a distraction to what they're doing? Because everybody's so busy.
Yeah. So first of all, I think what there's a couple things we know. You have to know the preferred mode of communication for the person you're working with, right? So okay. Hopefully if they're ghosting you, you've had some interaction.
Yeah.
And I often use the technique to reconfirm what I heard, and if I know what the outcomes they're looking for or the problems they're trying to solve, try to understand, has something changed?
Mm-hmm.
Has something changed? And maybe give them a piece of, share an insight or a piece of information that might be interesting to that individual and add value to it. And it doesn't even need to be information that I've created or a infographic or a, you know, piece of content that I've created. It might be something in an industry thing that I thought might be interesting. You know, everything's about AI right now. Maybe it's a article or a blog post on AI that I might say, hey, Rebecca, I thought this might be of interest to you. I'm seeing this. Are you? Would you be open to having a virtual cup of coffee and reconnecting on this topic?
Love it. Are you tired of endless diets and frustrating results? I know I was, and I didn't want to count calories, count macros, and I definitely didn't want to jab myself in the stomach with a needle to get the benefits of GLP-1. I'm so grateful I discovered the Body Transformation System. I have been on this easy to follow supplement program for a month, and I cannot even believe it. I went from 25% to 17% body fat. I haven't been under 20% body fat in my entire adult life. What I love about this system is it's all natural. It helps you regulate appetite, boost your metabolism, and burn fat. No chemicals, no needles, no harsh stimulants, no side effects, just results. All you have to do is go to the show notes to grab your sample. I can't wait for you to get the same results that I'm getting. And let's get lean and strong together. See you back in the show.
Love it. Too many salespeople, I think, just ask for time. And it feels like what I call a howdy doody call. I just want to spend some time with you to build a relationship. Well, if we did that with everybody asked for that, that's all we do. So you got to find a little more compelling reason, and it's got to be about them and not you. And that's some of the technique that we teach in some of that.
So your value selling framework, what actually is your framework?
Our framework is a conversational approach to how you create opportunities, advance them, and close them. So it is, what is the framework of a conversation that you would have with anybody selling anything that helps you understand how your prospective buyer will answer four questions? Should I do business with Rebecca? Mm-hmm. Is it worth it? If I'm going to spend this money with Rebecca, is it worth it to me? Mm-hmm. Can I do business with Rebecca? And that really applies, especially when you're in a B2B world. Like, you can't sell to someone who can't buy.
Right.
You need to understand who's got the power, the authority, the ability to actually sign contracts and spend money, because it's not everybody. And then the fourth question is, when am I going to buy? And if I understand that about anybody that I'm selling to, I am going to win more than I'm going to lose.
So what,
many sales reps only find out if they should buy, but never find out if they can or they will.
So how do you ask those questions without being so confrontational?
It's no questions have to be confrontational. It's just a process of as you gain better insight of even just saying, so Rebecca, we've been talking about my training program. When you successfully implement this, what are the outcomes you would expect? Would you expect? Ooh. Would you see new customers? What's each customer worth to you? Would you see your existing customers spend more with you? Okay, what would that look like? How much is that in a year, a month, a quarter? And you start to quantify those outcomes. But then I'm also just asking some questions like, hey, Rebecca, is there anybody else that needs to be involved in this decision on your end?
Mm-hmm.
Is there anybody you'd consult with? And if you're selling big ticket items,
That can lead to the big objection, I need to talk to my spouse.
It can in a B2C world.
Yeah.
And then again, you're saying, okay, what do you need to discuss with your spouse? How can I help you prepare for that?
Yeah.
Because again, that could be just a deferral of, gosh, I'd really want to do this, but I can't do this. One of the points of qualifying your prospect is disqualifying the shoppers.
Because
think of how many times do you spend time with people that are never going to buy, and they might just suck the ever-living life out of you.
The tire kickers. They're called
the tire kickers.
How do you assess them out, Julie? Because I think a lot of people have wasted a lot of time with the tire kickers and they get discouraged. So
asking the uncomfortable questions. If you're convinced that this is right for you, are you in a position to move forward and take action?
I love your questions.
So that's not confrontational, but it's just asking that question.
Yeah.
If it's a yes or a no, now you're in a conversation. Okay, well, is there anything that I can help with that would put you in a position, or is timing not right? Should I reach back out to you at a later time? All of those questions, if we don't ask them, we don't know what the barrier is. And there are times when I'll have somebody say, you know what, Julie, I really want to work with you, and I think you're the best fit for us, and there's no way I can afford to do this right now. I want to know that sooner rather than later, rather than me spending my valuable, scarce time on someone who ultimately is going to say, no, I can't do this. Now, it doesn't mean that I'm rude to them. It doesn't mean I'm going to fire my prospect. I might put them on a back burner, keep them in my newsletter cadences and all those types of things. But just knowing they are not somebody that I should be spending my scarce resource of time with, because they're not in a position to buy in the time frame that we're talking about.
Yeah, that is really valuable advice. So what are the six pillars of sales that you teach?
We talk about six fundamental principles in selling. And the type of salespeople that we work with are selling something that is typically more than just a procurement decision. It's more than I just am trying to go through and decide which is the best, you know, paper supplier for that. We are working with companies that they're selling something that has a little more implication to their business. So the first principle is people buy from people. Mm-hmm. And people buy from people they like, and people buy from people they trust, and people tend to buy from people that people get to be trusted by knowing, leaning in and being trustworthy with the other person. So people buy from people is our first fundamental principle. How do you establish relationships, build trust, credibility, rapport, all those things. Number two is people need a reason to change. And so that's part of our questioning process. It would be great if their reason to change is they just never run into us before, but it doesn't usually work that way. So people need a reason to change. And that is one of the keys to selling value, is tapping into that reason to change. The third key pillar that we teach is called the product is in the mind of the buyer. How do I position my solution to fit into what inevitably the buyer has already preconceived as to what they need? And therefore, I need to understand what they think they need, what they think it's going to take to solve this, and then position accordingly. The fourth principle is, and you'll love this, Rebecca, people make emotional buying decisions for logical reasons.
That's what I was going to say. People love to buy, but they hate to be sold.
Exactly. Well, for sure. Yeah. When you feel like you're being sold, your resistance goes up.
Yes.
But if you're facilitating a buying process, resistance stays down. And then closing the sale is just the logical outcome of that conversation.
So how do you get people to do, repeat number five again?
So number four. People make emotional buying decisions for logical reasons.
Yes.
You need to understand the individual's motivation and how to tap into that. Number five is the correct use of power is key. And that is all about understanding, especially in a B2B space, but in a B2C space, if, as you said, if it comes down to a spouse needs to get involved, who are all the people that need to be involved in this decision? Who are the stakeholders? And as a sales rep, I ideally want access to all of them, not just one of them. So you have questions you want to review with your spouse? Would it be appropriate for us to meet together? And maybe I can answer all those questions as well. And then the last principle that we teach is you can't sell to someone who can't buy. Mm-hmm. And a lot of sales reps spend tremendous cycle time selling to non-decision makers.
Repeat five again.
The correct use of power is key.
So
your power is the seller and their power is a buyer. You want to understand that. And those are really the six fundamental principles that are the underpinnings of the program that we do, starting with trust and rapport, all the way through to qualifying who's going to buy and when are they going to buy.
And how long do you tell your trainees to set aside for a typical sales call?
Well, I think that's different for a lot of different, it depends on what you're selling, but the question becomes, what is the appropriate time to engage any prospect? Most people that I work with, they think of their calendar in 30 and 60 minute blocks, right? Mm-hmm. So for the types of stuff we're selling, and when I'm selling my services, it is not typically a single sales call. It's a series of sales calls where I develop that shared understanding over time. So for example, earlier this week, I had a 30-minute call with a prospective client, and then we're following that up tomorrow with a one-hour call. I think at the end of that 1 hour tomorrow, we're going to know whether or not it makes sense. sense for us to go to what I would call a pre-proposal review, where I would present some level of a scope of work at a high level of how we might work together. Now, what I haven't asked this person yet, and I'll find out, is who else needs to be involved. She works for a company. She's got a team of people. She's got a boss. She's got colleagues. So that, rather than a pre-proposal review, it might be additional conversations with other people, getting her boss involved or what have you. I have to ask those questions to understand what that next best step is. And it's different for every opportunity that I work with. They have a different process internally of vetting vendors, making decisions, and that type of stuff.
So do you enjoy selling more one-on-one or one-to-many?
I think sales is a one-on-one sport. I think it is much more, you learn more one-on-one. Now, there are times when I do one-on-many because you're speaking or you're educating or you're creating need, or doing a presentation to one-on-many. Earlier, right before this, I had I was joining one of my sales reps, and we had 8 people from the prospect client, and it was their buying committee for this, listening to us walk them through what our approach would be. Very little interaction. And so all of the selling was really done ahead of time. This is presenting. But when you're on Zoom with 8 people and everybody's on mute, you know they're only listening about half the time.
Yeah.
We try to keep them engaged by whenever we do something like that, we'll have someone in chat also maybe prompting questions or reiterating points and things like that. But that is not, selling happens earlier in the conversation where you're doing discovery, needs assessment, and determining whether or not it's a mutually good fit.
So that's a good tweetable if you're listening. Selling is a one-on-one sport. It's not a one-to-many. I mean, there are, you know, masters at selling from the stage where everyone runs to the back of the room with their credit card. But I think that is like, you know, the top 1% of salespeople can do that. I don't think that's typical.
Well, and I mean, I think, you know, normally that is with an audience that has high trust and credibility with you already. And normally, if they're paying with it on a credit card, it is something that's within the realm of responsibility for a business to consumer. Now, it might be small business. I might be putting it on my business, American Express, right? But it is more mimicking a B2C sale than a B2B sale. Because most corporations, if they're going to buy a $1 million piece of software, aren't putting it on a credit card.
What do you think is easier, B2B or B2C?
Oh, I think they all have their own challenges. And I think the challenges have to be that doesn't matter what you sell today, the marketplace you operate in is very crowded, very noisy, and it's very difficult to determine the differences between various products. So B2C, depending on what you sell, has a lot to do with your brand and your reputation and your relationships. From that standpoint, I mean, I've had brand loyalty to certain types of products, because I just have fallen in love with those products. There may be better products out there, but I have no reason to change and switch. B2B is hard because B2B buying is hard. Companies are risk averse. There's a lot of people that involved. I mean, I worked with a client last week. They're making about $100,000 training decision. So it's not insignificant. It's a good size opportunity, right? They have 10 people that have been involved in, like, so far, 3 meetings with me, but they have 5 other vendors. So now they have 10 people, and these are probably executives making a good salary. In about, 3 times 5, 15 hours of meetings times 10 people, they're spending more money making the decision in hidden expense of the time these executives are spending in this decision than they will be with the vendor they choose to do business with. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Just make a decision. I like to say that I'm in the decision collecting business.
There you go.
Even a no, I mean, at least you're not wasting everybody's time. So
yeah,
no's are great because you know where people stand.
Absolutely. That's why when you qualify your opportunity, you're also disqualifying the garbage out of your pipeline. And when you do that, you see your win rate go up because you're focusing on the right fit clients and you're doing the activities to actually demonstrate that you can fulfill the promises that you make during the sales cycle and deliver the outcomes they expect.
So the final couple of questions, what makes somebody stand out? There's so many salespeople, there's so many companies. What makes somebody want to buy? Like, why is being different not enough? What do you really need to be a standout in the sales profession?
So we often say that there is a being different is not the same as being differentiated.
Mm.
So different is a list of what's unique about your capabilities or your offer, or your products or your services, right? It's important. If you want to not be a commodity, there has to be some uniqueness to you. And it doesn't always have to be your capabilities. It could be uniqueness in your business model or your terms and conditions and how people work with you. It could be a uniqueness around your brand reputation or how easy it is to work with you. You know, why do we buy from Amazon right now? Because we don't even have to get out of our chair. And stuff will sometimes be delivered. I've ordered things at 6 o'clock in the morning and had them on my doorstep by 8 o'clock. And I don't know how they do it.
It's crazy. Too easy. That's why I say Amazon is my cardio. It's just
exactly.
It's too easy to spend money there. That's why Jeffrey Bezos is the richest man who ever lived.
Absolutely. So it's crazy. So they differentiate on that buying experience and the ease of doing business. But being differentiated is understanding what that uniqueness does for the individual customer you're talking to. So for example, if you were selling Amazon to my mother, who is not tech savvy, who maybe gets her joy from getting out of the house and going to Target or what have you, that is not going to be, that capability is not going to be enough to sway her to buy from you.
Mm-hmm.
So understanding your unique value propositions and the uniqueness of your offer, and then understanding, does the individual customer, prospective customer you're talking about, care about that? That's how you become differentiated. So one example is I have my program, we're delivered all over the world, and I have trainers, and we can deliver value selling training in 17 different languages. Wow. Some people, my multinational clients, they really care about that because they want localized in-language training, you know, in France or in Italy or wherever their reps might be. But, you know, a sales team in Sacramento, California with 25 people all selling to the U.S., they don't need that. So if I spend too much time talking about a differentiator that you don't care about, all I'm doing potentially is demonstrating and giving you a reason to not choose me.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. Or to use your mom's example, she doesn't care about the convenience of not leaving her house because she loves, you know, getting dressed up and going to the store.
Absolutely. So. Putting on her lipstick, getting out, getting, you know, who's she going to see at the store today? Absolutely. It's powerful. So you have to understand your buyer's needs to contextually again position. And the more I know about you, the better I'm going to be at serving you and partnering with you. And many reps Just don't ask enough questions. Or here's the other thing that happens. Let's say I'm selling to you, Rebecca, and you give me one thing that, gosh, I can do that perfectly well. You know, you say, hey, what I really need help with is learning how to handle objections. And I'm like, great. So what do I do as a sales rep? I stop asking questions and I start telling you about my product or service for that problem. And now it's harder to go back and say, but what else? And I can pigeonhole myself that way and be incomplete.
Mm.
So
don't just get hyper focused on one pain point. Make sure you cover all the benefits.
Uncover them all. Uncover them all. The best salespeople are really good problem experts in the area that they sell. They're really good at that. They'll spend more time really understanding, amplifying. It's a terrible analogy, but a prospect of mine uses it all the time. They'll just keep picking at the scab and getting it kind of bigger and bigger and bigger. It's an ugly analogy, but I haven't figured out something that to replace it with. And think about it. That's what infomercials do. Did you know before you ever saw the Sham Wow in a commercial that it was so hard to mop stuff up on the counters?
Exactly. Yeah.
They take what is a problem, a nuisance, and they make it bigger than a bread box and bigger than a bread box. And then they come in with their solution and say, this is the best thing since sliced bread. Absolutely.
So true. So what if you could put something on the side of the highway, one sentence on a billboard about your life philosophy, what would it say?
Stop selling, start solving. Get deeper customer intimacy in understanding them and focus on how you can add value to them. And when I approach my clients from that point of view of service, those are the clients that I have developed that are customers for life.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much, Julie. I know you're so busy and it's been such a delight to have you on the show. Do you have a way for people to keep in touch with you or anything that you want to offer the listeners?
Absolutely. So there's two things if you want to learn more. First of all, visit my website. It's growist.com to learn more about our program. You can find me on LinkedIn, Julie Thomas on LinkedIn. I'm not hard to find. For business, that's the platform I use for my personal connections, but I do have Growist has a presence on both Facebook and Instagram as well. And then the other thing I'll offer is I wrote a book and it's called The Power of Value Selling. And if you are interested in learning more about how you can sell at a very reasonable, improve your sales skills at a very reasonable price point, buy the book or buy it for your favorite sales professional as a stocking stuffer coming into the holidays. And that's a great way to learn about the value selling framework as well.
And where can they find the book? On your website or Amazon?
Amazon.com, anywhere where you can buy books. Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, any place where you would normally buy a book. It's available Kindle, audio, as well as hardcover.
And it's called Value-Based Selling?
The Power of Value Selling.
The Power of Value Selling. So we'll put that in the show notes.
Fantastic. Thank you.
All right, everyone. Well, this has been another wonderful episode of the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant podcast. I am your host, Rebecca Whitman, taking you from burned out and overwhelmed to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. Your ratings, your reviews, your sharing this show with your friends have helped us just soar through the ranks. We're the top 1% of all podcasts globally. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. If you haven't reviewed us and helped this show grow on Amazon, please do that. It would mean everything to me. Thanks everyone for listening, and we'll see you next time. Until we meet again, keep your vibe high and magnetize. Thank you for listening to another amazing episode of the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show. I hope you found great advice and actionable tips. Don't forget to share this episode with a friend. And if you loved it, rate, review, and subscribe. We are so excited to watch you transform from burned out to blissed out as you continue with us on this transformation journey. Until next time. Keep your vibe high and magnetize. Imagine looking back at the end of 2025 and saying the best decision I ever made in the entire year was going to the Mindset Manifestation Retreat in Playa del Carmen, Mexico with Rebecca. Not only will we set intentions, goals, and strategies for your new year, we will give you 21 customized affirmations, a vision board, a power word, a playlist, and every tool you need to get all 7 pillars of your life to a level 10 and to crush your goals in 2025. In addition to all the goal setting and masterminding, you'll get to relax in a luxury spa, do yoga, and have a sound bath, all at a beautiful retreat in amazing Playa del Carmen, Mexico. And if you can't make it all the way to Mexico, which I know you want to do, and I can't wait to see you in Mexico, I'm having a little mini version of that on December 29th. It is a free training I do every year for my community called the New Year, New You Workshop, where you will get 21 customized affirmations to make sure that 2025 is your best year ever. Go to the show notes to learn more. I'll see you at the retreat.